Hey, everybody. My name is Damara West, and I'm founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their healing and liberation so that they can lead and live on their own terms. I am ecstatic about welcoming you into the Global Abundance Summit, which is all about helping you to amplify your power, to draw in more money, more joy, and more ease. And Majora Carter is one of the 18 speakers across the globe who is going to inspire us to do just that. Majora is a real estate developer, an urban revitalization strategy consultant, a MacArthur Fellow, and a Peabody Award-winning broadcaster. She is also a lecturer at Princeton University's Keller Center, and she has helped connect tech industry pioneers such as Etsy, Gus, Fresh Direct, Google, and Cisco to diverse communities all across the country. She currently serves on the board of directors for Streb and Solar One, and has served on the boards for the U.S. Green Building Council, CERES, the Wilderness Society, and the Andrew Goodman Foundation. She has started many, many, many ventures over the years, including Sustainable South Bronx in 2001, Green for All in 2007, her private consulting firm in 2008, which was named Best for the World by B Corp in 2014, and Boogie Down Grind, which is a hip hop themed specialty coffee and craft beer spot in 2017. And it is the first commercial third space in the Hunts Point section of the South Bronx since the mid-1980s. Oh my God, y'all, we got a pioneer in our midst. So on top of that, while at Sustainable South Bronx, Carter deployed MIT's first ever mobile fab lab to the South Bronx, where it served as an early iteration of the maker spaces found all over the country today. Majora, I am so excited about this partnership, my sister.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we're going to dive right in. There are very few women, and more specifically women of color, and even more specifically Black women in the development space. So how can we break into the industry from an intersectional lens based on the factors that keep us away? And what are the benefits to diving into the development space?
I mean, it's the reason why I wrote this book, Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one, because I think what we've been experiencing, whether Black women, people of color, coming from communities that have usually been planned for by people from outside of our communities, we're not the ones actually benefiting from what real estate development could be, which is generational wealth creation, you know, developing the kind of businesses that we want to see, and that we could create a circular economy in our own community. And because we've not been in that game, we are not the ones who are ultimately benefiting from it, you know, for our own communities. And that's why I became a developer, because I realized somebody else was always going to be claiming, you know, how my community should be developed. And it was pretty clear to me that that had nothing to do with what we really wanted to see as a community.
Yeah. You know, and one of the beautiful things about development that I'm learning, and you know, as I share with you, launching a tiny home retreat center and stepping into the development space for the very first time, and the gift it is, right, to see people like you in the space, because they're so far and few between, particularly depending on where you're at. And, you know, the saying that, you know, you can do good and do well, I feel that development is one of the major industries that allows us to do good and do well. So, you know, outside of all the ways that we've imparted through your bio, you know, how can we do good and do well in the development space, right? Because it can provide a very lucrative living, even when we're doing very impactful work in our communities.
Usually, but I actually even go further back than that, which is the fact that, you know, so my approach to real estate development is talent retention approach, which is the same way. It's like when you think about business development, you're a company, or rather the head of a company, doesn't hire people, doesn't hire talent, and you know, pour training and other resources into those people so that the competition can hire them away. But we don't do that in our own communities. Like, honestly, there is more of a talent repulsion, you know, strategy associated with it. And I'm giving you all this because ultimately, I think one of the first business owners that's often overlooked are homeowners.
Yeah,
especially homeowners that might have, you know, a rental apartment associated with it. And we and Black folks, as we know, have lost a tremendous amount of just generational wealth, you know, in large part, you know, there's whether it's private private equity, real estate development firms or holding companies, you know, we have literally watched the home ownership rate of Black Americans just go down, including their generational wealth capacity over the years. And it hasn't been that long. Mm-hmm. And yes, we can say that it's about, you know, financial disinvestment. We can say that it's about discrimination in banking. All of that's true. But sometimes people in our own communities do not even think about, they don't see the value in our home until it's almost too late. In our own communities until it's almost too late. That's why predatory speculation is such a huge thing. So all that to say, my first thing is just like homeowners, consider yourself a business owner, because if you do, once you keep grandma's house, as opposed to selling it for somebody who's a, you know, for someone who's telling you, who calls you up and says they're part of an investor group and, you know, they see, you know, they can take that building off of your hands and they're generally getting it to you or from you for below market rates because you don't know the value of your land. Mm-hmm. So the first things first, I think, is really people in our communities keeping their land. Mm-hmm. Not selling that's grandma's so house.
Yes. Yes.
Seriously. And so that's the first one. And I, of course, and the more people that own land in our own neighborhoods, the more stable those communities are.
Yeah.
Just in general. So, but I think and we need to start really redefining real estate development. Because I include local economic development in that too. If you are, you know, acquiring the land, but also developing the business on it, I consider that a developer because that's exactly what I've done. You know, yeah. So we've got but I think the whole idea is that you want to do it in a way that actually supports the communities that you're from.
Yeah.
And because if we're not the ones doing that, I guarantee you somebody else will. And I'm not opposed to people making money. I want them to. I'd like to make some for a change in my life as well. Because
listen, this is the claiming that because it's the abundance summit. We claim it.
Totally. Okay? Because it's honestly working as a developer in my own neighborhood, which is a predominantly Latino and Black community that has been well known to be the place where, you know, outside affordable housing developers will come in or healthcare, you know, clinics. And that's the development that we see here. So somebody like me, who's literally watching our people from our community take their time, talent, and their money out of their community and put it in somebody else's while ours continues to be redeveloped by people that do not look like this. And I'm like,
yeah,
why aren't we putting ourselves, you know, in the position so we're the ones actually developing the kind of communities that make us feel like we don't have to move out of our neighborhoods to live in a better one?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, well, and that's what you have been doing, right? And that's what you will continue to do. And this is clearly your life's work. And you're a model for what this can look like when we're talking about sustainable development and development that it really changes the fabric of communities because you are upping the ante for everyone.
Everybody. Right. And the beautiful thing, I'm not alone. I mean, the kind of model that I have, number one, I'm not the first one to do it at all. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered when writing this book, which is now a national bestseller, by the way,
all right.
Is that there have been folks who have been kind of doing it on their own. I mean, a little bit different everywhere you go. But the bottom line is, it's like they've been feeling like, wait, why are we not developing our own community? Like, who says I can't do it? Like, why do I get these like both really overt and sometimes very subtle, you know, ideas about like people, you know, we need to do this kind of stuff for this neighborhood, not people like us. That's so right. I think I feel like all I've done, you know, for all these years is just sort of give people, you know, especially, you know, women of color in particular, give them an opportunity to recognize just how much we can do if we give ourselves the capacity and to do it.
Yeah. And the permission, right?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter that the fabric of developers don't usually look like this or that development doesn't usually look like this.
Right.
And I love what you said, like you're not the first, because the reality is that there's nothing really new under the sun. Now we can put our own spin on it. You have your individualized life. We all have an individualized pathway, that which is why we should never compare ourselves to somebody else. There's enough literally for all of us to go around. And, you know, this leads me to my next question, you know, knowing that land ownership and creating sustainable development in our communities is really essential to boosting the fabric of a community. So how, knowing that there are a lot of financial barriers to us doing that, and there's also the skepticism about us pooling our resources together, how can we counter that so that we can really leverage our investments for the greater good of us all, essentially?
Yeah. I mean, what's beautiful now, and listen, we have the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission, you know, to thank for this, is there's crowdfunding, you know, in investments. Platforms in particular for real estate development. And that has been a game changer for a lot of people out there, you know, who, you know, are looking for different ways to develop their capital stack and who can, you know, actually then call upon their neighbors, their friends and their neighbors. Because it used to be that you could only be an accredited investor, which I think, if I'm pretty sure, it's like you have to have, you make more than $200,000 and have a net worth of over $1 million, which means that rules out a bunch of Americans. But with crowdfunding, some, depending on your deal, you can put in like as low as $100. You get the same rate of return as someone who puts in $1 million, but you still get to the same exact information in terms of understanding what the deal is, you know, what kind of profit it's going to make, what it's doing. You get the same access as the guy who's a millionaire. Period. And I think that when we saw that and we did that actually for our cafe, you know, during the pandemic, I mean, we really just wanted to use it as a learning tool for folks so they can see like, wait a second, we can own and participate in the future of our community. Yeah. And that has, that was an amazing experience. And we're going to be doing it for our, the event hall that we're also working on called Bronxlandia, which is transforming a former rail station into, you know, what we know is going to be one of the premier music spots, you know, within New York City within the next year or so.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so excited. Like, you just don't stop, right? This is what I love. Like, we heard it in your bio, hearing about this new project that's coming down the pipeline. And, you know, you have been, even though you haven't like been in pursuit of this, you know, you're a MacArthur fellow, you're a Peabody Award winning broadcaster, and you were named 100 most intriguing entrepreneurs.
That was funny.
Right? Just to name a few. So you're like, what do you attribute to your success?
Look, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made by God. I feel like that, you know, before I even knew that that was the case, I feel like I was just being positioned, you know, to sort of walk into rooms, you know, and see myself as someone who could make some, a very particular type of change, given the talents that I was given. And, but you know, that's the thing that really does, you know, help me. I feel like this is my ministry. This is like, I love God. I love my neighbor. This is the manifestation of that. So that's really, you know, I feel like this is something that I was born to do. You're 100% right. I do feel that way.
Yeah. Well, and you just said so many things in that, right? Like you knew that you were divinely made. You knew what your gifts and treasures were. You really knew yourself. And, you know, when we talk about purpose, and sometimes we poo-poo purpose, but the reality is that like purpose is the juice.
Amen.
And we can really step into our purpose, then magical things can really happen from that place that are uniquely ours to carry out in the world, to alchemize, whatever that might be. So one of the things that is so fascinating about you is your words are featured in the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture in DC. Yeah. And more specifically, those words are, nobody should have to move out of their neighborhood to live in a better one.
Yeah.
And imagine that when you said that, you had no idea where those words were going to land. Mm-hmm. And they landed in one of the most prestigious museums in the country. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about, in what ways have you utilized your voice to create abundance such as this in your life?
Yeah. So I wasn't the first to say something like that. I actually heard it from a young woman who worked with me when I ran Sustainable South Bronx. And she said something like, it was some version of that. And I was just like, and I just found myself repeating it all the time. And so we actually, her name is Marta Rodriguez. There's a huge 40-foot high mural with that phrase on it, and it's attributed to her. So I want to be real clear. But I did use it a lot, like decades. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's what it means, you know, to have something attributed to you. So I'm like, okay, I'll take it. But what's beautiful is that it literally has been not just my marching orders, but it does trigger something in most people when they hear it. And it's just, and sometimes it's like, I can think that, especially if they're coming from the kind of communities that I discuss mostly, which are people, I call them low status communities. Mm-hmm. And they're the kind of communities that are, you know, essentially, they're poor health outcomes, lower health education, you know, educational attainment, you know, higher rates of incarceration. They could be suburban, urban. They could be Black. They could be white. They could be Latino. They could be Native American. You know, they're the type of places where it implies that inequality is assumed. Mm-hmm. And that's what people understand because they feel like if you're from a low status neighborhood, the best you can do is measure success by how far you get away. And I challenge that with the talent retention approach to community development, because I'm like, first of all, we've never, ever had an issue with amazing, talented people coming from our communities, ever. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with keeping them. And then the obvious next question is, well, why do we do that? And I'm like, well, the short answer is white supremacy. The longer answer is like, because we've not been led to believe that there's value in our communities. And I think that does have something to do with the way we view ourselves while we're in them. So mm-hmm. we have to take ourselves out. And I'm like, let's challenge that notion. How about we do that? How about we recognize, like, we are the best things in our community. Mm-hmm. And if we're the best things, then we have the ability to make more of the best things for ourselves that benefit us. So that's what we do.
So, you know, what I love about what you're sharing is, and you named it, right, that white supremacy in part fed this narrative unbeknownst to us that we're caring about the devaluing of place. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And devaluing place for many reasons, right? And particularly when we're comparing it to other places.
Absolutely.
And yet our healing, the liberation work that you're doing is saying, no, we are valuable and we're going to invest in this place to make you see the value, right? Mm-hmm. But part of seeing the value is also seeing the value within. And it reminds me of a quote by Harriet Tubman that said, you know, I would have freed more people if they had only known that they were slaves. Mm. And as we are talking about systems changing, and we always need to be talking about systems changing. We always mm-hmm. need always. To be calling truth to power. But mm-hmm. and as we call truth to power, we have to do our individual work of liberation so that we can see the light for ourselves first, which mm-hmm. then of course, the people that we're called to serve, you, for example, in the South Bronx, die hard for the South Bronx. Like, oh, you gonna see the South Bronx. You mm-hmm. you gonna see this as a beautiful, divine place mm-hmm. to live and to raise your family and to worship and to play, right? In the case of some of the projects that you do, right? I think Coffee House, Brew House.
Oh, there's a lot of playing involved.
There's a lot.
Yes.
I imagine.
It's gotta be fun.
I might come visit you.
It's gotta be fun. Really, yes. Really does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And so this was really, I love that. I love that you're, you know, just acknowledging that, you know, the reason why we have fed into this in part is because we believe the hype, right? We have taken on this narrative as if it's our own, but it's mm-hmm. not, it's not our narrative, right?
Nope.
And that we can really be propelled to do something about it. So you talked about this talent retention approach that really honors the people, and not just honors the people, but honors place, honors community.
Right. Yeah.
So talk to us about this approach and why we should consider the people in our pursuits.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you stop and think about it, right? Billions of dollars are spent in communities like in the South Bronx and low status communities everywhere, philanthropically, business development, you know, government spending. So somebody has recognized that there's plenty of money to be had and to make, and it's transferred. Does it stay here? No. But the business approach, you know, when you think about talent retention in terms of business strategies, it's all about recognizing there's talent and you nurture it and you support it. And believe me, some of that billions is spent on nurturing the talent that's here. The academically, the artistically gifted. Don't tell me there's gifted and talented programs. You know, there's extra money spent on athletes that come from our communities. Many of them, like, I don't know any of their names, but I keep hearing about them and they're from so many hoods. I mean, I'm sorry, if like Black people literally took control of what they bring to, whether it's like the major league baseball, football, blah, 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 it could change the course of this country. Like yesterday, but we don't do that. But that's a whole other story.
But it's really not, right? Because we're talking about abundance and
But the question is, are we actually taking that and bringing it back into our communities? And the 100%. Thing is, we are not.
Yeah,
we are not. So that's the problem that we have to like recognize, because we're not doing that. And that's when it's like, I'm trying to say. It's just like, we know, like, people will spend money, you know, on the smart ones, you know, the gifted ones, blah, blah, blah. And then they will literally extract them. But there's still money to be made here. Affordable housing developers know full well how to like build housing that's for the lowest income bands, for the developer fee that's associated with it. Do the neighborhoods get better? The pharmaceutical industries and the healthcare industry, big portion of their balance sheet are low status communities. Yeah. They make huge amounts of money off the lifestyle conditions of people in our community, whether they're environmentally, you know, or otherwise, you know, put in places here, you know, that has decreased cancer, respiratory issues, da da da. Somebody's making money off of that.
Yeah.
And so we're like, how about we flip that? How about we recognize that won't have to be all of them. It doesn't have to be everybody from our community that decides to stay, but it does need to be a couple of us who go, you know what, I'm going to make the emotional and the financial investment in my own community.
Yeah.
And be that example so that other folks follow suit.
Absolutely. This is so good, right? Because what's spurring in me is certainly like, we should be led by our own compass. And sometimes the compass is going to take us out of community, right?
Yes. Let's
be real about that. But even when we're being called out of community, I think that this call to action, and I don't know if you knew that you were doing a call to action, but I'm taking it as a call to action, is to, if we're going to leave, to ask ourselves, what can we do through the abundance creation from our own lives to pour back into this community? And knowing that maybe even there was hardship in this community, right? There was trauma that we endured in this community.
Always is. Always
100%.
Is.
100%. Because you can't have
on purpose,
place,
it was here.
Right? That has the kind of outcomes that you just talked about without trauma, right? They need. But I love what you said also, that these communities, like, we don't think about poverty as being a moneymaker. Like, who actually gains from poverty? It's not the people in the communities that gain.
Nope.
It's all these corporations.
But we're blamed for it. We are blamed for it. We are continued. It's like, it's all our fault. I mean, the fact that this here face, the face of a Black woman, is considered the face of poverty, even though there are more white people. I'm called a welfare queen. White women are not called welfare queens, even though there's way more of them than there are of us.
Mm.
You know, we've like literally, you know, had like been railroaded in so many ways, from health to, you know, transportation to banking. All those things have been foisted upon our communities, and yet somehow or another it's our fault.
So you're getting us to really think about, right, the ways in which we have fed into the biases that exist, that we did not create, that have become our truths, and that are precipitating behaviors that are harmful to communities, right? Because I do think that even if we're called to leave place, my hope is that we still feel an affinity to take our abundance and pour back into place.
But most of us don't.
Solution.
And that's part of the problem.
And that's, and so that's in part what you're saying, gosh, if we only knew the value, if we only pooled these resources, if we only thought if I gave X number of dollars to support this particular initiative, if I only pooled together with other folks from the South Bronx, right? And we said, this is what we're going to do collectively. So I love this, and it's spurring all kinds of things in me. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about visionary leadership, because you are definitely a visionary leader. And you've launched many things over the years, exemplifying that, and a real willingness to take risk, right? Because you can't do all the things that you've done, I mean, and not take risks. So right. How can we step fully into our vision while being okay with the risk of testing the waters, of beta testing, as we called it, in the field?
You have to test.
It's hard,
but it's just like, seriously, there's no other way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, blessed enough, you know, and also I would add stupid enough to not know what I was getting myself into when I did the bulk of the testing that I did. I used my own money, you know, cause I've made, you know, tidy sum, you know, doing consulting and speaking engagements and stuff like that, you know, over the years. And I would literally just turn around and pour it, you know, into what these kind of third space and social enterprises that I figured needed to happen in communities like ours. Because quite frankly, when you are testing the waters, you're generally way far ahead of the curve. I was definitely, you know, ahead of my time in like everything. We started all of our projects like long before sort of like the typical real estate development curve would have them. And, you know, and we've suffered as a result of it. Seriously. Like, you know, I do it kind of, there's a part of sometimes, you know, I wish that I was a white guy, you know, who was, you know, who came from some money, or who just somebody said, oh, you know, he's trying to help those, the poor colored people. Like, I'm going to support them. We see a lot of that over here. Is usually within the nonprofit industrial complex, but we see it. Yes. But for me, there was none of that. Like, oh, let's see if you can build up, you know, people's like ideas about the value that we could have in our own communities if we create these kind of social enterprises here. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anybody going, hey, let's have, even though she's a MacArthur fellow and all that stuff. So yeah. I put my own money into these things. And so that was the test. And slowly what we are seeing is that of course it made sense. We knew it made sense. But again, the first money in, the first projects in, really difficult. You know, we had to be the test. And what I'm hoping is that there'll be less of that for the people that come behind me. Yes. Because it is just like ridiculous. But again, I think it shows you the value that's placed on people like us in our in low status communities, which is not a very high value, especially, you know, by financial institutions, you know, looking at us. But the value that I see coming from our community really has been incredible. And seeing, you know, why this is so great.
Yeah. Well, and you know, something that you just said is it's reminiscent of a conversation I had with someone recently about like when we are approaching solutions like the solutions that you have rolled out in the development space, or you know, myself in the wellness space, and transitioning into development, it's really coming from a very personal place, right? Our stake is different. And so when I think about investors, when I think about venture capitalists, when I think about people who are serving in community, and that are allies or accomplices, or they are usually not coming at it from a personal experience, right? Yeah. They're coming at it from this something that they've heard or a training, or, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's important for us to hear that because the stake is different, and how we approach it is different, and the emotional and the mental and the financial toil that goes along with that, then allies and accomplices have to, we're inviting you in to also examine the way in which you invest in community so that you can be sustainably investing in partnership with people that are in the trenches, that have a personal touch into these communities that they're working so tenaciously to change.
Right. No, I loved hearing about, I can't remember the name of the foundation that's supporting the retreat that you're doing. I was who are these people?
I know.
I was so happy for you. so happy for all the folks that are going to be able to benefit from your amazingness. Just this is going to bring out theirs. And I was just like, that's an accomplice, whoever these people are.
And you know what? Yeah. You nailed it, right? And so if people are listening and all of us have a level of influence and some of us aren't running private foundations and have the ability to write the big checks, right? Mm-hmm. But all of us are actively working to curate solutions in our communities that are connected to the heartbeat of the people, right? And raising the consciousness of the people, the human condition. True. And so when we think about this, I think we all have to ask ourselves, what more can we do as a company and allies to make that our legacy is 100% connected to not just the bottom line, which oftentimes, like, you know, all of this has been about economics, right? I mean, yes. All of it's been about, and it's still about economics.
Always.
And you're inviting us in again. You got all these calls of action. You didn't know, Majora, but I'm just saying it's calls to action. Okay, I'll take it. For us to really do more to create abundance in the lives of the communities as a result of the abundance that we've been given, right? Mm. To know that as an ally and an accomplice, now we have responsibilities, hopefully, that we feel because these are our communities. Yes. But then as accomplices and allies, we feel a real responsibility to invest.
Yes.
Because of the outpouring that we have, right? And so I really appreciate this. And you're right, everything is beta testing, right? There is no way to be innovative and not do some testing out in the world. So
right.
As we get ready to wrap up, I'm curious about, you know, what does abundance actually mean to you? And what are your go-to abundance practices?
Oh, yeah. Well, what does abundance mean to me? It just means, I mean, literally, it's knowing that I'm enough, what I have is enough. And if it feels like I don't have everything I need right now, it's just not the time. And being comfortable with that. But the practices that keep me full is literally my mornings where I'm not talking to anybody but God. And, you know, I'm working out for me. And, you know, I'm just thinking about, or not thinking, honestly, because I just do love to meditate. And it's just all about, like, how do I fill my own cup so that I can actually constantly feel that whether or not everything is working my way, but it's going to be okay.
Mm, yeah. I love the simplicity of that definition of abundance and how all your practices are really just rooted in stillness, right? And that is what it, I mean, you know, in order for us to hear and see the way that God, universe, source, creator is supporting us, it does require a stillness, right?
Yes.
Stillness is one of the ways to really fast track our evolution. And, you know, we can't read our way through this stuff. We have to sense our way through, sit our way through, reflect our way through, pray our way through, write our way through, request our way through, over and over and over again. So, Majora, as we get ready to wrap up, share with us a final piece of inspiration that you have for the audience to step fully into having an abundant life for themselves first, and then for the communities that they are privileged to touch.
I feel like, so I don't know if this isn't, it's just something that literally I have been thinking about because I'm obviously a pretty, very visual kind of thinker. It's like I do project-based development. I do all sorts of stuff, but there's it's part of the, don't ask me exactly because I'm really bad at like quoting scripture, but what it's in Psalm 5 and it's basically about like your gifts, right? And so, but it's just like, God, you know, I lay my offerings down and then wait for fire to descend. And as we know, burnishing, this is what you do with gold. This is what you do with like a precious metal. And it's the fire that actually makes it shine brighter. And I was like, okay, just think about it. You may go through the fire. As a matter of fact, you will. Everything that you offer is going to in some way be unloved by somebody other than you. Maybe you might not even like it. Maybe you might wish you were something else. But going through all of it, offering it up anyway, that's how you're going to succeed.
I love that. And you know, this touched me deeply because I'm finishing my first book called Me Too, A Therapist's Journey to Heal From Trauma, Find Liberation and Joy. And I mean, you talk about the fire, right? And what I know to be true is that everything that I endured is painful. And some of it was just gut wrenching.
Yep.
Like, how did I survive this?
Yes, I know.
But what I know is that all of it made me.
Amen. Yes.
All of it brought me here. Mm-hmm. All this, even just this conversation I'm having with you, this Global Abundance Summit, all of it is connected to the pathway. And we have real power to alchemize, right? Our communities through our light. But it starts with the alchemization of self first, healing that we have to do. And the power plays that you're engaged in, Majora, and really activating change, that's one of the ways that we reclaim our power, right? It's like, no, this is not on my watch. I'm going to do everything in my power to use my light to do good in the world. Because the people in this community, I deserve it. And the people in this community deserve it too. So thank you, my queen. I appreciate you so, so much.
Right back at you.
Majora, share with the audience how they can stay in touch with you, because I know that they're going to want to do that.
Sure.
And we'll make sure to have all the links for them as well.
Sure. So I'm on Instagram at Majora Carter. You can buy my book, Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. Anywhere you buy books, please. And let's see. Boogie Down Grind on Instagram, Bronxlandia on Instagram. If you're in New York or visiting, holler at us. My website is MajoraCarterGroup.com. Yep.
Majora, thank you. So I'm definitely going to be getting Reclaiming Your Community. Y'all heard I'm moving into the development space.
Yes.
On my reading list, so that I can expand my capacity and be inspired in the midst of, you know, my next chapter. So, keep doing what you're doing. You are doing amazing work, and you will continue to make your mark and blaze a trail everywhere that you go. And we are gifted as a result of it, right? It
thank
is a
you.
Gift to all of us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Y'all heard it here at the Global Abundance Summit, which is all about helping you to have more joy, more ease, more peace, more power, more of it all. Until next time, beauties. Ashe.
Ashe.